I have never been good at gardening. I'm convinced it takes a very special kind of person to have the discipline and the knowledge, the know-how, and the love to plan and maintain a healthy, beautiful garden. It's something I really appreciate and enjoy, that other people work in the earth and make these beautiful things, and I can enjoy it, but it's not a gift that I myself have or have experienced. I don't have an eye for laying out gardens and patterns, or especially the ability to visualize in my head what a garden will look like after the tiny seedlings become the full mature plants. And I'm almost ashamed to admit that I don't even know the names of common garden plants beyond the ones that my mother favored for years. Though I can, to my credit, I can spot a variety of native Central Texas plants from my experience going out and hiking. So all this to say, this probably won't surprise you, but I'm not very good at taking care of plants. I fondly remember afternoons in my childhood helping my grandmother and her large, beautiful gardens, planting flowers from little plastic trays at designated locations. But my grandmother would inevitably come and check up on my work and issue many corrections. But those are fond memories. We would work the afternoons away while my grandfather napped inside, and we were always rewarded with shaved frozen lemonade. Recently, I inherited two plants from my grandmother's townhome when she relocated to a smaller, more comfortable apartment closer to my parents' house. One is an aloe vera plant, which I am happy to report is thriving on my balcony. The other was a small leafy shrub. My grandmother told me the name of the shrub, and I immediately forgot the name of it, and so I couldn't Google to figure out how to take care of it, and as a result, it is now quite dead. It's to my great shame. I don't know if I overwatered it or if I underwatered it, if I let it get too much light, if I didn't let it get enough light. To me, it's a mystery. But needless to say, I have a lot to learn when it comes to tending plants. For a recent class, my class on sin, I read a chapter from a book called Inheriting Our Mother's Gardens, Feminist Theology in the Third World Perspective. The chapter I read was written by the editor of the book, whose name was Letty Russell. Letty is a theologian, and she was one of the first ordained women in the Presbyterian Church. She was a longtime professor at the Yale Divinity School, and she was a leading voice in feminist biblical criticism in the United States. The chapter I read was titled From Garden to Table. In it, Letty describes the many different gardens that she grew up in, both literal gardens and metaphorical gardens. These gardens are fondly remembered childhood playscapes, and they are also the cultural norms and assumptions that Letty's mother programmed into her daughter. For example, she describes on one page the Victory Garden behind her childhood New Jersey home, with fresh vegetables full of things that a child may not want to eat, like Swiss chard. But she also describes her relationship with the church down the road, and that her family attended when they were children. She describes that as a garden of its own right. Her post-war middle-class childhood was just as much a garden to her as her grandmother's overgrown rose garden on Long Island. What Letty is pointing out is that we all inherit our mother's gardens. We all receive the way that we are grown, we are watered, we are pruned and nurtured by our caretakers, by our mothers and our fathers. And as we navigate the pathways of the forests of adulthood, we carry with us the seeds planted by those who nurtured us. So how am I doing with my gardening metaphors? Sometimes the childhood gardens that we carry with us are to be celebrated. But sometimes the plants that were thoughtlessly planted at a young age with good intention, they need to be noticed and considered, perhaps uprooted and cast away for our own good. Sometimes things planted in good faith in one age turn out to be unhealthy in the next. No matter how faithful our human gardeners are, they are still only human, after all. I think all of this is part of what Jesus means when he explains, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit." Boy, that sounds uncomfortable, doesn't it? It turns out no one escapes the great cosmic branch trimmers here in what Jesus is saying. For even the branches that produce good fruit will be clipped a little here, trimmed a little bit there, so that they bear even better fruit. And pruning sounds painful. I don't know a lot about growing basil, but I do know a little bit about making pesto. And I've seen firsthand that if you pinch off the flowers from the basil plants, it causes more of those delicious leaves to grow. A little bit of pruning creates more leaves. But basil aside, it sounds daunting to hear that the Father will prune us and remove our dead branches. Those of you who have children and those of you who were once children, you know that maturing can be an uncomfortable process for everyone involved. But it's all a part of becoming the person that God made us to be. Maturing is messy, it's noisy, but it's often joyful. And in this light, I don't find Jesus' words all that frightening. I don't find it too daunting when he tells us that the Father will prune every branch that bears fruit. It's a part of living our lives fully, the way that God intended, nestled in the sustaining vine named Jesus Christ. It could help, though, to clarify some terms. For example, what does Jesus mean when he says fruit? What fruit are we to bear? Where is this fruit? Where is it found? And maybe most importantly, who gets to enjoy the fruit smoothie? Jesus said, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." And again, Jesus said, "They who have my commandments and keep them are those who love me. And those who love me will be loved by my Father, and I will love them and reveal myself to them." The fruit that we cultivate is love. Love for God and Jesus Christ, and love for one another. It is for love that we are cultivated. It is for love that we are to be pruned. It is for love that this whole messy, loud, joyful process of maturing exists. And the fruit is found on the branches that extend from me to you, from us to our neighbors. It is found on the branch that extends from all of us here gathered to God, safely in the vine of Jesus Christ. Now, as a short aside, I preached my final sermon at the seminary this past Wednesday at Christ Chapel, and that was marked for the occasion of St. Mark's Feast. So my sermon was pretty much a meditation on the Gospel of Mark. And this is somewhat unintentionally placed, the Gospel of Mark and the conversation with the Gospel of John, which we received this morning, because I had to do both of these sermons within the span of about 4 days. So they've been talking to each other in my head. In Mark, Jesus is on the go immediately. First chapter, he's out the door right from the very beginning. In Mark, we see a side of Christ that is always on the go, moving from one place to the next, from one wilderness to another countryside, from one conversation to another, from one miracle to another. Jesus in Mark has this almost desperate pace, as if trying to do as much as possible before the end. And in the end of Mark, Jesus departs. He leaves the picture. He's gone. The tomb is empty. The women leave in fear, and we do not get a resurrection account. In Mark, Jesus is on the move. But in the Gospel of John, Jesus has come to abide. Jesus has come to stay. In the Gospel of John, Jesus does very little running about. In fact, in John, the disciples come to Jesus. They say, "Master, where are you staying?" It's not the other way around. The Gospel of John is characterized by these long speeches and deep relationships. And the words of the Gospel of John makes Jesus' love for his friends explicitly clear. In John, Jesus is the one who abides. He's the one who greets Mary in the garden. He's the one who guides Thomas's hand to his side. He cooks fish with his friends on the beach. Even when he's gone, he's not really gone. For Jesus said, "You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. I am the vine. You are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing." We abide in Jesus. Jesus abides in us. When we abide in Jesus, we will bear the fruit that is love. When God is the one who is doing the pruning, we can be assured that we will bear much fruit indeed. For God is the gardener, and here we are in the garden. In this garden that we call St. Julian's, I see much fruit. This full place is full of fruit, of compassion and love. The fruits of your garden are connection and joy. I have seen the way that you welcome strangers. I have seen the way that you care for each other's children. I've gotten to participate in many meals. Sometimes it was soup, other times it was Franklin's barbecue. But the fact remains that I have literally been fed by the fruit of this place. And I am honored that I get the privilege of sharing God's bounty here for a time. And in a few weeks, when it is time for me to leave this place and start the next chapter of my journey, I rejoice that I get to share the good news of you abroad, for there is much good news to share. But that will be then. For now, back to gardens. Because we're left with this concerning fact that gardens change. They change all the time. They change based on seasons and on the soil. They change based on their location and on their climate. In some seasons, they bear good fruit. In other seasons, they lay in wait. But I believe that this is all a good thing. Sometimes uncertainty abounds, and the only thing that is clear is that things will change. Sometimes they need to change. Sometimes the gardens of our past have turned into the scary forests of our present, and it's hard to see the path for the trees. But Jesus said, "Abide in me as I abide in you." At our center, even with the seemingly random turnings and changes, the passing of seasons, we abide with Christ's constant, unchanging love. It is this faith that sustains us and nurtures us. It is this faith that comforts us. Jesus never promised us that we would be perfectly happy and comfortable if we followed him. Often it was the opposite. But we know that with discomfort can come maturity. So we abide with the vine at the center, and we trust that the change that we see from season to season will be channeled by our all-loving and sustaining gardener into something that brings forth abundance. The God who made all things good will restore all things to be perfect goodness in time. And with God as our gardener, we know that there will be fruit. And for now, we will abide in this garden and play and learn and grow. Amen.